Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 47, section 7, which is old single column, page 537. Enough sevens for you there? Okay. All right, so the fifth mansion world. So it, you know, a little tricky to kind of get yourself spun up again. Remember that, you know, we are trying to see as much of the logic of the sequence through these worlds as we can. And we brought out a lot of issues last session as we were going through the second, third, and fourth mansion worlds. One of the things that, you know, besides what they state directly, remember about the post-Adamic for the first, post-magisterial for the second, post-bestowal son for the third, post-Trinity teacher son for the fourth, you know, that basic pattern. You know, we were also noticing how they were giving us a rough idea about where the people are, where the ascenders are, relative to the circles as they're going through the worlds. And remember the third mansion world, they were hinting that you can basically think of that as third circlers. You know, predominantly the individuals are getting to the third circlers, third circle as they're getting to the, you know, working through the third mansion world. And so that as we moved into the fourth, we're thinking of people moving into the second psychic circle and towards the first infusion as we go into the fifth and sixth. So those were some of the basic things that they were pointing out. And before we start reading, just I'll remind you again of what they said. You know, it was the towards the end of their comments about the second mansion world. Remember, they said that from sphere to sphere, you grow less material, more intellectual, and slightly more spiritual. The spiritual progress is greatest on the last three of these seven progressive worlds. Right? And we kind of ended on that last time. You know, so that's what we're ready to do, finally, those last three. And we were noting how that seemed reasonable, that maybe something would start to be a little bit more tangibly spiritual, because in the sequence you're moving into worlds that have some synchrony to nativity spheres that have reached light and life. You know, and so that significant stage of development on a world that, you know, finally getting them to light and life. When you take that up to the mansion worlds, that, you know, that seems logical. That should definitely get some, at least some rudimentary, real spiritual nature in play. You know, in a little bit more of a direct way. I mean, there's always been an indirect relationship to spirit. Right now, you have an indirect relationship to spirit. It could be a quite significant indirect relationship to spirit, but it's a very indirect relationship to spirit. The very fact that you might finally get to the point where you would fuse with a fact that in some sense you can call a spirit fragment. Right? Fuse with your adjuster. That too seem, you know, would seem to indicate that you're getting, you know, at least at some rudimentary level up to eye level with the stuff. Right? Now, it's been the case, as you know, as you've been working through these worlds, that your Marantia senses are maturing, and spirit substance is, you know, beginning to be a much more literal, tangible aspect of the external world. You know, in your perception, you know, you're starting to actually stumble over spirit bricks, right, and things. So, you know, that's it's starting to become more literal, both in your outer life and in your inner life. And then there, you know, the point is that now it's starting to really take on some definitive form and engagement. All right, so let's see what happens when that's the case. All right, go ahead.
7, the fifth mansion world. Transport to the fifth mansion world represents a tremendous forward step in the life of a Marantra progressor. The experience on this world is a real foretaste of Jerusalem life. Here, you begin to realize the high destiny of the loyal evolutionary worlds, since they may normally progress to this stage during their natural planetary development. The culture of this mansion world corresponds in general to that of the early era of light and life on the planets of normal evolutionary progress. And from this, you can understand why it is so arranged that the highly cultured and progressive types of beings who sometimes inhabit these advanced evolutionary worlds are exempt from passing through one or more, or even all, of the mansion spheres.
Right. So obviously that's a corollary phenomenon, that if this world is getting to be synchronized roughly with early light and life, worlds that are, into light and life, and especially deep into light and life, are obviously going to have individuals that could just be skipping over everything you do in the mansion worlds, because they're getting all that done, in their roughly 500 years of life on their nativity sphere. Okay? But one thing you could note, though, they've made a point of literally stating it twice, remember, that even though these things are kind of roughly synchronized with those dispensations, spiritually, on the mansion worlds, you are definitively above anything that can happen when you have a material identity on a nativity sphere. So, that kind of reminds you of the fact that even when beings skip over a bunch of worlds, they have to go back. See, because there are things on those worlds that they couldn't get on their nativity sphere. They basically got the stuff on the mansion worlds that you can get as a bottom-up sort of maturing phenomenon. But that spiritual, that unity, that experientially sealing-like aspect, you think about it, you jump way ahead and you come back down. See, it's like you're penetrating down through the ceiling and getting the ceiling nature, rather than the floor-up nature of the worlds. So you can see how that's also logical that you would jump over and come back down like that and experience a bit of top-down and get that spiritual aspect, even though you've got it all of the bottom-up.
That if you are pre-light and life, like we are on this planet, that you have the opportunity to get more, the potential to get more of the top down because of the effort, struggle, conflict? Or anybody that can get a far enough advance is still going to come back.
None of us are going to be skipping any mansion worlds, but you get some normal world in light and life, where they actually, are skipping a bunch of mansion worlds. They don't just totally skip them, remember? They come back and teach,
yes.
Right? They come back as mentors.
Yes.
Right? They're approaching those worlds from the top down, see, as it were. They are relating more unity down to individuality. They're bringing their more unified, bigger perspective, down into relationship with those that are coming up, and hence acquiring experientially, a real relationship to those spiritual aspects that that weren't there on their nativity sphere, but are there when you actually have a Marantra body.
So maybe I should ask it like this. Mm-hmm. If you don't skip and you work through, you've got more of the top-down view.
Right, okay, so think about, if like us. Okay, so we go to the first mansion world. We start at the bottom of the first mansion world. We work from the floor all the way up through to the ceiling and through the ceiling of the first mansion world and go to the second mansion world. So we get the whole floor-to-ceiling experience.
Oh, each time.
Each time.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Right? But if you skip over, you're not going to go all the way down to, you know, if you go back and teach on the first mansion world, you don't have to go all the way down to the floor of experience. You got all of that. Yeah, but you do need to experience what it's like to be in relationship to, say, post-Adamic sort of phenomena with a much more immediate relationship to spirit that a Marantia, identity gives you. Right. And again, it's like I was saying, it's when your material identity, there's just nothing eye level about spirit at all. I mean, all you have is your faith grasp to reach way up above your nature and take a hold of something way above you with that faith grasp. But if my body is literally partially made out of spirit energy, right? I mean, I'm not having to reach up to get to my body. It's right there. I mean, I'm at some level, I'm at eye level with spirit.
Yeah. So I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, I thought, remember, even if you come from light and life, don't you get resurrected on the first one, stay for 10 days, go to the second, go to the third, or not?
Not if you're actually in the mode, as we'll read about in a few papers here, where you, you definitively, start on Gerasim or start on Edentia or something. I mean, you don't go to the first mansion world, skip.
No,
you just jump all the way.
If you start on fifth mansion world, let's say, would you get resurrected on the first?
If you're going to be resurrected on the mansion worlds, you'll start at the first and do 10, 10, 10, 10 up to 5. Yeah. Right, but if you're due to just be resurrected on Gerasim, no 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Right.
I got you. Right. You still come back here, though, right?
Right, but you'll come back and teach,
What was it, Chris, that said that we go from animal to angel, from angel to spirit, and spirit to God? Wasn't it in these papers?
Yeah, you'll see that they're going to make a reference to that here in just a little bit. They're going to give you some clues, for those of you in the webinar, they're going to give us some clues about, as we're moving up in our Marantia nature, how are we in relationship, say, to the type of body that a seraphim has, and we're obviously moving up in parallel, and they give us some clues about that here in a little bit. Let's see. So what else do we have there? So the experience on this world is a real foretaste of Gerasim life, they say there towards the beginning. And then they tell you that you're synchronizing with early light and life. Turn that around. Gerasim is an architectural sphere. And this world that's kind of like a light and life world is synchronizing a lot with an architectural world. Remember? So that gives you that recognition. Oh, yeah, of course. That's what evolutionary worlds are evolving toward. When all is said and done with an evolutionary world, it's like an architectural sphere. The end point of an evolutionary world through that long process of evolution is what you establish by fiat in building an architectural world. Right? So that when all is said and done, you have like worlds. Right? You're going to have 7 trillion like worlds. All of the evolutionary worlds and all the architectural spheres all become, of like kind when the grand universe is settled in light and life. So you can see that right here, that a world getting to light and life, it's like, oh, this is starting to be a lot like an architectural sphere. And it's like, well, Marantia, the 7 mansion worlds are Marantia worlds, yes, but they're purposely downstepped, right? You don't really get to the full-on architectural sphere experience until you get to Gerasim. Or when you went over to the other major satellites and stuff, but just thinking about the 7 worlds and then Gerasim, you're building your way up in terms of what's on those worlds, to something that has sort of the full architectural sphere experience on Gerasim.
There'll still be a difference though, because even the world is artificial.
Right. Like I said, it's just like I was saying. I mean, you know that obviously the world you're standing on didn't evolve into existence. They built it, when you're on the first mansion world. But, they sort of have that hidden, if you will. They have sort of a skin of post-Adamic experience, you know, wrapped around that architectural sphere, you know, so that your immediate environment is not a full-on fiat architectural world, right? That would be skipping the process. You can't evolve through those dispensations in an environment that isn't like you, right? You and your environment are evolving together, right? Yeah, remember how they tell you that even in a very primitive stage, the geology of this planet is synchronized with the evolution of biology, right? The evolution of geology, and that just becomes more and more manifest as you move towards a power personality synthesis way, way down in deeply settled light and life. Right? More and more pattern and personality are working together as one pattern. Energy and spirit are working together in many ways as if they're one substance. You know, because you bring it together with a super additive consequence and you have an effective one substance. You have the triunity of the three energies. And it's like one energy. Yeah. All right, let's see. What else did we have there? Let's see. Light and life. I think we got everything there. All right, let's keep going.
Having mastered the local universe language before leaving the fourth mansion world, you now devote more time to the perfection of the tongue of Uversa, to the end that you may be proficient in both languages before arriving on Jerusalem with residential status. All sending mortals are bilingual from the system headquarters up to Havona, and then it is only necessary to enlarge the super universe vocabulary, still additional enlargement being required for residence on Paradise.
Okay, so see there that what we've been talking about a little bit leading up to this whole bit about the languages, and remember how I pointed out in the fourth mansion world where they were talking about how ascenders here develop increased appreciation of the broadcasts and other phases of local universe culture and progress, and I said, well, that's mainly because you are being able to consciousize the local universe tongue. See, and this, I told you they would tell you that directly when we got to the next section. And see, so they, like they said, you've mastered that on the back there in the fourth mansion world, and now you're starting to work on the super universe tongue. And that also reminds you, if you remember reading about worlds in light and life, you know, when worlds start to get deeply settled in light and life, you know, they actually start teaching the super universe tongue to, on the nativity sphere. Right. So again, speaking to how much those worlds are getting to be like Gerasim, like a full-on architectural world, and like they're saying here, you have to be proficient in both before arriving on Gerasim. Right. So just to see how you can bounce back and forth and understand about the architectural worlds by thinking about what they say about light and life worlds and vice versa. Yeah, do you have a question, Gene?
Oh, no. I'm looking forward to being able to master just one language. And then, too, that'll be icing on the cake.
Yeah, and of course, these are, the word language is, what that invokes in our minds. Try to think as beyond the simplicity of our crude languages as you possibly can to understand what these tongues are. These are more a very advanced, holistic state of consciousness, of mind activity, where you've begun to transcend, a lot of relationship to linearity. You've begun to be able to think transcendent of time, right? You're thinking more directly in terms of motion instead of time, right? I mean, that's why they call it motion consciousness, moda consciousness, remember? So
can we use example of when Jesus was praying and he made these sounds that I think some of the apostles, three maybe of the apostles, remember it was...
Well, again, we don't know what exactly the master physical controllers were doing for a multimedia experience for people. You know, when Jesus would, during his public ministry, when he was, as Michael, he would do things. Remember, if humans are aware of anything, it's because the master physical controllers are, like on the Mount of Transfiguration, they're building a light show for people and stuff, and so there's always this question of, how literally you can take these things.
Remember that one time? Yeah.
Crackling.
Yeah.
Crackling sound.
Well, the crack. No, I mean she's not thinking of the
yeah.
that, but she's.
No, there's one. Yeah. There's one description in here where he was praying and it was like a tongue mm-hmm. or something. Does anybody else remember that?
Right, but again, remember that if he was thinking in the local universe tongue, no one would have it has any receptor for that, right? I mean, if I had the ability right now, first of all, I don't jiggle air molecules to get it to you. I mean, I directly go, through the mind energy to, to get it into your consciousness. Yeah, and that input into your consciousness, would have no resonance. It's like they tell you, if you ever plop you in Havona right now or plop you on the Isle of Paradise, you would be devoid of any, sensory input at all. I mean, you don't have any ability to synchronize with anything there. I mean, we don't have any ability to synchronize with the local universe tongue. It's not going to sound like, some sort of unintelligible whatever or anything. You're not going to hear anything. Right?
Yeah, I
see. It's just, you have no relationship to that consciousness. Right, if there's, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if there's anything that apostles or disciples or whoever is experiencing, there's some sort of a translator thing going on where master physical controllers are doing something or whoever is doing something to make it experienceable, right? I mean, the only reason Jesus in his branch appearances is visually experienceable is because they've encased him in physical energy in some clever way, right? There's all those issues. Just to think about what it'll be like to think in a language where you're fundamentally not thinking like you are right now as a temporal sequence of thoughts, right? There'll be sequentiality, but not a temporal sequentiality as we currently understand it. I mean, And like I was saying, I mean, fundamentally, you won't be communicating a sequence. You're communicating a holistic fact. A sentence is a sequence of words, right? You won't be communicating like that.
Could you say a harmony of thought?
There's just going to be some sort of a holistic, element that you bequeath to another person, it's so much of what we want to communicate is, right now I'm doing this, and then in 5 minutes I'm going to do that. We want to talk, and relate our temporal sequence to other people. See, and you won't be motivated like that. See, so again, it's just, I actually don't know what I'm talking about. Right? I just know it's, what it is that I'm going to be doing there is nothing like what I'm doing here. It's going to be very transcendent. It will be a very different experience, and you'll have very different motivation behind what you're doing. To try to imagine what that is. Yeah, did you have something?
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of, not right what I was going to say, but so we have the brains right now, chemical things that are going through our brain and our IQs and all that stuff, so that's here. But once we get there, we won't have any of that. So that's gone. The brain will be gone. So then we'll have a Marantia mind, and then it'll be more open. So we'll be able to learn language much quicker. it's not going to be this daunting thing of like trying to learn Russian or trying to, you know what I mean? I think it's going to be...
Right, it will be less, yeah, because it'll be less of a linear slog, you know. You know, that's why it's so difficult, you know, because we have to just, you know, step our way through it, you know, plod, you know, into relationship with things when you can somehow just encompass things more. However, you know, learning will not be an ease, as they're going to tell us here as we go forward. There's a lot of difficulty still. It'll just, the things that are difficult now won't be difficult, like you're saying. You'll have higher difficulties, more worthy difficulties. Yeah.
So if you, you know, forget English when you resurrect, or maybe have a little bit, I don't know, and then you learn the mansion world tongues and you forget them, and you've got the local universe, and then you've got the tongue of Uversa, why do you maintain the local universe tongue all the way through the minor and major sectors and even on through Havona? Why would you retain that as well? I can understand why you need Uversa, but once you leave your local universe, would you...
No, I mean, you know, let's...
Just because it's part of you and you remember it?
Right, and you just, once you have it, you have it. You know, maybe by the time you leave the local universe, who knows what things you might do. Maybe you will have learned, you know, 6,000 different nativity world languages. And you'll know all those forever.
Okay.
You know, when angels go to a world, they learn all the languages. You know? You know, but in terms of us ascending, remember, you just have this, you know, until you are through the fourth mansion world and know the local universe tongue, you've been using that crutch language, the so-called tongue of Satania, you know, which is sort of just a glorified nativity sphere-like language. You know, something that is, that all the mortals in the local system can all synchronize with in some way. You know, kind of in the way we tried to create a hybrid Esperanto language, you know, sort of touching upon many languages on this planet.
So what do you imagine happens when you first resurrect? Are you communicated to in a language or in, you know?
Right, well, that's a very curious thing to wonder about, you know. I mean, how much ability to really communicate or relate do you have right off the bat? It's like, well, they tell you that you can immediately, you know, go and find relatives and stuff like this. So you must be able to hit the ground running to a degree with this.
And your guardian angel, I guess, understands your...
But, you know...
Your guardian angel speaks English.
Right, I mean, your guardian angel can speak...
Your guardian angel speaks every language on the planet.
Right. And, you know, so the question is, you know, do they work with, you know, do they help you on that level? I mean, they're a little vague on that. Exactly what mechanism you communicate with. I mean, Andre's got a good point, though. You know, I mean, you can always fall back on your nativity world stuff, but, you know, I don't know.
What's the harp of God, then?
Oh, we'll get to that.
Go ahead.
All right, let's see. Was there anything else? Oh, yeah, see. Yeah, so talking about the languages and you know, just you know, again, you know, like they're trying to stress there that you know, that you once you have these, you know, you can carry those all the way through to paradise. You know, so they're trying to stress the, you know, just how fundamentally holistic and transcendent these are. I mean, you'll have the framework right away that can sustain you, you know, for the rest of the finite age. You know, so you can see there's no way to imagine somehow taking English and having it be able to be something that, you know, you could imagine could serve universally throughout the grand universe until it's settled in light and life. I mean, you know, that just seems silly. It's like, oh, it doesn't have that degree, you know, of adaptability, of flexibility. So you're learning something, see, that's much more dynamic, much more fluid, you know, and so just... Yeah, that's why they're giving you those thoughts.
Yeah, they say that right up front in the forward about our language, you know.
Right, how limited, you know, it is, how, and how, you know, rigid it is, how, you know, how little that you can deal with subtleties in it, you know, and stuff like this, you know.
They use the term circumscribed.
Right, circumscribed language of the realm, yeah. Right. So anyway, but yeah, I mean, but anyway, getting back to it, it'll be fun to learn, you know, fill in some of these details. As, like we said, as you read these, they give you so little specifics. You know, there's just endless questions that we always have. It's like, well, exactly how do you do that? And they don't tell you. You know, you can't help but think, it's like, well, I know this, I can't really understand everything on these worlds. It's really kind of beyond me, but still couldn't you give me some hint about that? They probably could have, but they weren't allowed to, you know? So I think sometimes it's not because this is so beyond us, you know, it's just because they weren't allowed to really give us any hints about, like, exactly how the language, you know, how learning the language and communicating initially works and stuff. They don't explain that.
Sometimes when I think about things, like if I'm thinking about what something smells like, I can imagine inside my mind's eye what it smells like or tastes like, or, you know, if I'm thinking about a recipe, you know, how I can think about combinations of flavors, or thinking about what something looks like, or imagining how something goes together, or, you know, just kind of thinking about things and rolling things around in my mind. You know, even thinking about, you know, music or concepts and things, they're not really so linear. They are more motion. I'm thinking if we are able to more directly and in an enriched way share stuff like that, that would be less grotesque than trying to use words.
I think that's a good point. No,
yeah, I mean, and just,
if you had a snappy song.
I mean, one way that you can start to reflect on what communicating will be like is imagine you could just communicate your thoughts without having to translate them, you know, into a sequence of words. Right? I mean, that's the gist of what you're talking about.
It's like my therapist tells me, you know, listen to what a woman is saying when she says nothing. Be able to understand that. That's the trick.
Just,
that's true.
I'll have what he's having.
But that, you know, that base. But that basic ability, you know, to, you know, when you think about it, I'm struggling to find the word here, you know, or, you know, I wish I could figure out how to put this into words, you know, this picture I have in my head or whatever. I mean, you'll naturally be able to communicate without having to downstep like that. See, what you're technically doing when you can't figure out how to express it, you can't figure out how to downstep it. Right? And so you won't have to downstep like that. And then the person that receives it won't have to upstep it again. And you avoid all the problems of, you know, when I take it, when I downstep it so that I can, you know, put it out my mouth, and then you receive it, and then you've got to bring it back up. Both of those, you know, taking it down and bringing it back up, there's a garbling that occurs. Right? And you don't have, that won't be in place anymore. Right? You can just communicate it without all of that translation difficulty of down and back up again. All right, let's keep going here.
You know, just before you go on, it's just 34 pages earlier that they go into that detail about, you know, the universal language and the language of Nevadon. And so, you know, we're just reading about that probably 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Let's see, how far do we go? Page? No, that might have been 34 weeks ago. Anyway, the point being that, you know, there are literally 48, you know, characters in the alphabet of Nevadon. There's 70 characters. They probably do correspond to something analogous to speech sounds, even though we're not jiggling air molecules. It's something that has to be able to be translated into air molecules, because they teach it to mortals on spheres of enlightened light, the Avendotters.
Right.
can actually teach a mortal the tongue of Uversa. So there's that aspect. Then there's the kind of interesting statement that really could be a thought provoker, because a couple of pages ahead of that, when they're talking about the celestial musicians, they say, you know, forever music will remain the universal language of men, angels, and spirits. And then there's this marvelous insight into Havona, where it says harmony is the speech of Havona. Mm-hmm. Now, when you say that all it requires is to augment the language of Uversa to be able to speak in Havona, and a little more for paradise, but it's stated otherwise that harmony is the speech of Havona, it's almost like you're triangulating on some new concept there to try to understand how communication is being elevated there.
Right. I mean, the basic thing about, you know, harmony is directly expressed via the triunity. Right. And so, you know, to speak harmony is to speak triunity. You know, and you see, we're building up to that. We're building up to the ability, see, to begin to actually start to have the individuality and the unity that there can be a super additive consequence of. Remember, they told us, we're just getting to the point of the fifth mansion world where there's something significantly unity-like going on to be in relationship to the individuality. Right? So, you know, we're just about to read that. That's what we're trying to build up to here. So, you know, it's just simply a matter of developing a deeper and deeper relationship to the triunity, to add those, you know, as they're saying, this adding to the vocabulary. You can speak in more and more holistic ways. You know, remember the cosmic, there's always cosmic levels they're talking about, higher and higher levels of harmony, right? And you just speak on higher and higher levels of harmony. You know, and once you can transcend the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, you know, of the super universes, and get into, you know, Havona, see, now you can really start to speak in a very holistic way. I mean, you know, you've transcended the limitations of what spirit means in a given super universe. See, so you've you've gotten to a level of harmony above that. You're liberated from that bondage to that individuation that you've only known relative to unity in that particular super universe. So, you know, you finally can speak in a more direct triune way. You know, and obviously we can't understand about, you know, what Andre was just pointing out. I mean, they tell you that there's alphabets, quote unquote. You know, there's some sort of individuation and, you know, pattern that's inherent in this triunity. You know, that it has a certain number of fundamental elements to it. See, I mean, they're speaking of, there's a whole physics of triunity. Just like there's 100 elements, you know, of material individuality. See, they're speaking about how there's elements in triunity and harmony. Right? And you take those fundamental atoms, you know, of harmony, and you build them into molecules of harmony, you know, and that's the language you're speaking. Right? So, I mean, that's, you know, but that's about as far as we can go, because we, like I said, we really don't know exactly what we're talking about. I mean, right now, harmony is kind of just a word. You know, we really don't have any sense of what that means, literally. Right? We're a long ways away from having moda consciousness, where we actually know what we mean, what we meant today as we said harmony so long ago, you know, as we're finally on the mansion worlds and thinking back. Okay, let's keep going here.
Upon arrival on mansion number 5, the pilgrim is given permission to visit the transition world of corresponding number, the sun's headquarters. Here, the ascendant mortal becomes personally familiar with the various groups of divine sonship. He has heard of these superb beings and has already met them on Jerusalem, but now he becomes he comes really to know them.
Okay, just one little thing there. Like I said, keep, you know, trying to bring in a bit of sequence. Just the interplay between the fourth and the fifth in that regard. You know, they told you in the on the fourth that you were engaging the super angels, like the brilliant evening stars. And you know how the brilliant evening stars serve in many different ways as sort of the means to the suns, you know, as an intermediary like phenomenon for the divine suns. You know, it's time to, you know, you're about your father's business, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, the brilliant evening stars. See how this builds up. So you get the engagement of the brilliant evening stars in the previous world, and then you go to the suns full on directly in this one. See, so, you know, you can do this with the suns on the fifth because you had the help of the super angels on the fourth. They were the means to that end.
Who are the suns?
Well, you mean you're especially trying to really get into definitive relationship with the Michael sons and the magisterial sons and the Trinity teacher sons. Now, obviously, Michael's sons is kind of a, you know, special case. Yeah, it's going to be the magisterial sons and the Trinity teacher sons that you're really. But in the process, you are beginning to have the ability to relate more directly to Michael. Yeah. You know, if you happen to bump into him somewhere, okay. You know, he does go out and about at times, right? He isn't always, you know, stuck on Salvington. All right. Right. So just, you know, even though that's a bit abstract, I'm just trying to point, that's why they're doing this sort of stuff. They're just trying to give you little things that you can hold on to. It's like, well, they have some things they can relate to here. You know, they know about how the brilliant evening star was relating to Michael when he was here as Jesus, and they've read stuff about how they work with the bestowal missions or the, you know, magisterial missions and these sorts of things, and so they're just trying to get you to see that you're taking that step. See, there's a sequence here. You're building everything, you know, on one world allows you to do what's on the next world. You know, you have to stand upon everything on a given world in order to get anything on the next world. Yeah, you know, like I said, you have to start at the floor in one world, go all the way up through the ceiling, because in the next world, the ceiling of the previous world is the floor on that world. Right? So everything on the next world is built upon, predicated upon the previous world. Okay.
On the fifth mansion world, you begin to learn of the constellation study worlds. Here you meet the first of the instructors who begin to prepare you for the subsequent constellation sojourn. More of this preparation continues on the worlds on world 6 and 7, while the finishing touches are supplied in the sector of the ascending mortals on Jerusalem.
Okay, so a little reminder of what a challenge lies ahead on the Adentia worlds and the constellation level, that they've got to start preparing you for that as soon as possible. I mean, on the fifth mansion worlds, the first time they can start to actually give you some rudimentary preparatory education relative to the demands at the constellation level. So as soon as they can start to give you something, they do, because you're going to need everything you can get in order to have any success at the constellation level. You know, and they're giving you that little bit about how remembering that it's sort of just a finishing touches, you know, as they say, their phenomenon on Gerasim. As we'll read here in a little bit, they take a class to Gerasim and they put the finishing touches on them and send them off to the constellation level. Gerasim is not a place where you're looking at some sort of a long-term phenomenon. Right? And again, that reminds you of the difference between the mansion worlds and Gerasim. The mansion worlds are a very developmental thing. Gerasim is just, you're just passing through. I mean, the thing that, the only exception to that is, the things that you need to do with the material sons and daughters, you can only do on Gerasim. And that might be sort of first mansion world stuff, you know, that's been put off until you finally get to Gerizim. But except for that issue, you know, you're sort of just there to get a couple finishing touches put on, and off you go. And, there was a question somewhere, wasn't there? Oh, there.
Although we obviously spend very little time here going through all this mess, but in comparison, you save very little time on the Mansion Worlds.
On Gerizim.
On Gerizim.
You'll spend probably, you know, we'll all spend a lot of time on the Mansion World.
A little time is not weeks.
Yeah, I mean, even on Gerizim, it's, you know, it'll be a significant chunk of time, but yeah. Not as long as, you know, what you spent on any of the Mansion Worlds. Okay. You know, let's say you spend, you know, 1,000 years on one of the Mansion Worlds. You're not going to spend 1,000 years on Gerizim. All right.
A real birth of cosmic consciousness takes place on Mansion World number 5. You are becoming universe-minded. This is indeed a time of expanding horizons. It is beginning to dawn upon the enlarging minds of ascending mortals that some stupendous and magnificent, some supernal and divine destiny awaits all who complete the progressive paradise ascension, which has been so laboriously but so joyfully and auspiciously begun. At about this point, the average mortal ascender begins to manifest bona fide experiential enthusiasm for the Havona ascent. Study is becoming voluntary, unselfish service natural, and worship spontaneous. A real Marantia character is budding. A real Marantia creature is evolving.
Okay, there's a bunch of stuff there, including a number of startling things, but let's just start with the basic thing that I've been alluding to. See, a real birth of cosmic consciousness takes place on Mansonia number 5. They're just reminding you, you know, we can talk about trying to foster favorable conditions for an expanding cosmic consciousness during this life, but it's a very, very rudimentary phenomenon. Because it's not until the fifth mansion world that in some definitive, more literal, eye-level sort of a way, tangible way, do you have a relationship to spirit, and hence, more literally, a spiritual consciousness that you can finally juxtapose with your long-standing material consciousness and finally get a definitive super-additive consequence of a cosmic consciousness. It takes you getting to fusion sorts of levels of development, like on the fifth mansion world, for the potential to really be there. You know, because you need a direct relationship to material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. And right now you have a direct relationship to material consciousness, but just an indirect, basically, relationship to spiritual consciousness. Now, we ignore that difference, you know, for the sake of discussion usually, but just a reminding of it here. It's not a very direct thing. So we can believe that we have a spiritual consciousness. We can even talk about how problematic our bias towards our spiritual consciousness can be in this life. But that's nothing like, what if you definitively had a spiritual consciousness and were biased instead of just this indirect thing? That could really be problematic. Yeah, like think about Lucifer, right? Someone who doesn't just have this quote-unquote spiritual consciousness, but a full-on spiritual consciousness. If he gets too biased to that, you know, closes his material consciousness eye too much, you know, forgets to think about the details, the individuality, the specifics, starts to get lost in the unity, gets ahead of himself, you know, wants to skip over a whole bunch of time, the time that's tied to all those details, right? Right? That's his problem. He lost his cosmic consciousness objectivity because he started letting, you know, his material consciousness eye get lazy. You know, he had a lazy eye. It started to close, and, you know, he started to fixate on his spiritual consciousness, you know, and in very short order, it becomes very problematic. Right? So it reminds you again, you know, they've stressed when you're on the mansion worlds, you may be in roughly a post-magisterial son sort of a state, but you have more spiritual consciousness there than you can ever have here, even before you get to the fifth mansion world. So again, you could do the Lucifer thing, right, and start to forget that you need to keep both eyes equally open. Yeah, and unrecognized to you, you're starting to close your individuality eye, your material consciousness eye, and you're just getting wide-eyed, single-eyed on unity consciousness, on spiritual consciousness. And that's going to take you off very rapidly to iniquity on the second mansion world or whatever. So it's, you know, every time you're given a new potential that is potentially positive, you're also being given a new potential that's potentially negative, you know, at an equal degree. Right? With every measure of creativity comes an equal measure of destructivity. So it's very appropriate that we are getting close to fusion here. If we're starting to get a much more significant spiritual consciousness, isn't it wonderful that we're also zeroing in, you know, and about to take a hold of that thought adjuster and eternalize ourselves, anchor ourselves solidly, because we're being given more and more potential to go flying off. That, you know, just keep that in mind. That you've been struggling without a lot for definitive cosmic consciousness on those early mansion worlds. And it's finally now coming into play on the fifth mansion world. So when they say things like, you notice that this is indeed a time of expanding horizons, perfecting horizons even. It is beginning to dawn upon, you know, just look at the way they say it. It is beginning to dawn. It's not it's dawning, it's beginning to dawn. Upon the enlarging minds of ascending mortals that some, see it's fuzzy still, stupendous and magnificent, some supernal and divine destiny awaits all who complete the progressive paradise ascension. It's like, really? It's just beginning to dawn? On the fifth mansion world? Right, so how clueless could you have been on those previous mansion worlds and possibly gone to iniquity? If it's just beginning to dawn, that this isn't just a fairy tale that you've been told for four mansion worlds, right? This whole paradise thing, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, well, what would make it so hard to really sort of definitively get a hold of, you know, and be certain of, which has been so laboriously, right? You know, you are still, it's like, why do I have to go through all of this effort? It seems like, philosophy after philosophy course, you know, until you're blue in the face. And
it's like what you were saying about Mother Teresa.
Right? You've been really slogging in the dark a lot still, you know, and you've had to have faith and trust, right? And but it's, at this point, the average mortal ascender begins to manifest a bona fide experiential enthusiasm for the Havona ascent. I mean, just think about those statements, right? You know, we're wondering, how could anyone in the first mansion world go to iniquity? I mean, at the fifth world, the average mortal begins to actually have enthusiasm for the Havona ascent. Before that, you know, okay, I'm ordered to report to the classroom at 12:38, and so you go there so you know they don't hit the cattle prod on you or whatever, you know. I mean, don't take it too literally, but you see what they're saying, Ed. I mean, you know, actually, you know, bona fide, you know, good faith, experiential enthusiasm. You actually want to get up in the morning and do all these things that you're told you have to do that day.
Voluntarily,
right? See? Study is becoming voluntary just on the fifth mansion world. You know, it's just this oppressive regime before. See, how could Lucifer convince these people? You know, it's because up until the fifth mansion world, you know, he says, look at this ridiculous arbitrary regime that they're imposing upon you. Did you volunteer for this? No, you're ordered, you're commanded, you know, by penalty of who knows what if you don't, you know, go to that. Yeah. And, you know, so he could easily convince them that this was all just some sort of oppression, you know, and it was being imposed upon everyone. And so they, you know, on those early mansion worlds, they followed him hook, line, and sinker.
They loved it, yeah.
Yeah.
And yet we do have the potential here to make a supreme decision and to take the light, actually the word delight, and...
We have the potential to fuse here, right? But... You know, just, you know, notice that, again, that, you know, if it takes you all the way up to the fifth mansion world to reach this kind of dawning clarity about some things, how likely is it that I'm going to fuse in this life? How likely is it I'm going to get to this level of clarity? I mean, I'm going to have to probably be in a very exceptional genetic phenomenon that somehow was kind of quite self-clarifying just by nature in order to get focused in like this and fuse, you know?
Yeah,
someone like Enoch, Elijah, you know, or Elijah, right? I mean,
odds of winning the lottery.
But the rest of us, you know, just cannot get this clear enough, definitive enough. There's always these, well, what if, you know, and these doubts and these hesitancies. And all right, so, you know, it's just really startling, you know?
Does anybody know? I mean, I should ask the priest about this. Does anybody know about Elijah and Enoch? What did they do? What was the example that they put forth?
No one knows. And the relatives don't clarify it. I mean, you're not going to, you know, if you read the Bible, you're thinking, oh, so if I'm just this brutal prophet, you know, I'll fuse. See, I mean, you know, there's no help from the Bible about what it was that, say, allowed. You know, why did Elijah fuse, but Elijah, why did Elijah fuse, but Elisha didn't, you know, for instance, you know, why did his side, you know, why did Batman fuse, but Robin didn't,
there has to be some clue.
Not much. I mean, again, because.
I mean, it says a supreme choice, so all of us have made a choice.
No, but that's not what gets you to fusion. No. That's what would get you an adjuster if you didn't get an adjuster automatically, if you made the supreme choice. But that just gets you an adjuster.
I thought that.
Right? No. I mean, right, what it means to have this level of cosmic consciousness, right, you're not going to find some revelation of that reading the story about Elijah in the Bible. You're not going to see his cosmic consciousness there. If for no other reason, I mean... That's written by people who are just looking at the outside at his material actions, right? Reading the story about, you know, how he moved molecules about is not going to tell you about why he fused. It has nothing to do with the outer life.
Yeah. Nobody around him got...
Right, there's no description of his inner life in the Bible, right? There's a description of his outer life, you know? In the same way, you know, you can read a lot about Jesus' outer life. Doesn't tell you anything about, you know, what you need to get to... It's not about following, you know, moving molecules around in a certain way that's sacred, you know, and then you're blessed, you know, in the eyes of the Lord, right?
That's why we're all here.
Okay, but just look again. I mean, you know,
remember
how they said, you know, last time that on the fourth mansion world, you know, you were just getting to the point where you could have social activities. That weren't predicated on personal aggrandizement or self-seeking conquest,
exactly.
Right? Okay, and here you see you're beginning to actually manifest unselfish service, naturally.
Startling.
Right, I mean, these are stunning statements. And worship spontaneous. I mean, genuine free will, remember, of the free will is what the word spontaneous means, you know? that you're actually starting to exercise your personality in a definitive way in relationship to this synchronization with the cosmos that is the fact of worship, right? So, I mean, if I'm just doing that on the fifth mansion world, how much am I manifesting personality right now? How much am I really worshiping right now, no matter how sublime a state I get into? Not much, right? You have to remember that, you know, you're only of value because of what you can become and what you're becoming, not because of what you're doing right now. Right? We're not doing anything fancy right now. We just aren't.
Does that mean I should just quit and be a
Right, right. And see, and if you...
So give up and...
Right. And because we've been so trained to think that all there is facts, see, that's what we think. Right? You need to hold on to the truth of what you are, not the fact of it. If you just, the more the revelation clarifies the fact of what you are, the more you'll give up, the more disillusioned you'll become. Right? Because there's no facts to hold on to. That's the fact.
Right?
Right? You're not really a fact at all yet. Right? You know, we're about to read, you don't even have a name, right? Until you fuse, okay?
Hey, you.
You're just number, you know, great many digits, right? Right. You're an unfertilized egg with a number stamped on it, right? Factually, you aren't anything.
But you're not treated that way.
Right, because you're not treated factually, you're treated in truth. And you need to start to treat yourself the same way now. You need to look at yourself the same way that celestials look at you, in truth, not in fact. Because if you don't, you will despair. Especially if you continue to read the Grantcha book and start to actually have it sink in what it's telling you, about how you're different from pond scum in name only, right? I mean, that's not going to help you with that tendency. I'm thinking that maybe I should just give up on this life.
That's not even truth or fact.
Right?
Right,
you know. Yeah,
don't ever say that again.
Right? But see, that's the thing. Yeah. See how achy that feels?
Yeah.
Right. In truth, I'm an eternal lighter. And so it doesn't matter if, in fact, I'm a pond scum. Can you get to the point where it doesn't matter? You know, if you don't like that, the sound of that, you're holding on to the fact of yourself.
Right.
Those timid souls who can only keep up the struggle of life by the aid of continuous false illusions of success. Right? That's what we're talking about right here. You think you've succeeded in some way in your ascension career right now.
No.
No, you haven't. Right? You know, and if the only way you can keep going every day is by convincing yourself that you've achieved some sort of real milestone in ascension.
You're screwed.
Right? No. Like I said, I mean, there's a warning on this book. Warning, not for those timid souls, because it's not going to stroke that fairy tale that humans have about themselves. That they're this incredibly profound phenomenon, right? You're not loved because of what you don't have any value because of what you are. You have value because of what you're becoming.
About why I should have value.
All right, and so you need to focus on the truth. You need to recognize that the profound thing about you is that you are a becoming. An animal is not a becoming. It's just an is. It's not going anywhere. It's static. It's not an arrow, it's a dot. Right? Even as a lowly animal or a creature, you're a human. You're an up from the humus. An animal is not an up from the humus. It's just a fancy blob of dirt. Right? But you are a becoming. Right? That's why you have value. That's why you're profound. You need to see yourself as some, you know, as that in that dynamic way. See yourself truthfully.
Right? But I find, you know, when you read the Grantcha book and you study it, I mean, to me, you know, this whole thing about being enthusiastic about my career, I'm already starting to think about, you know, wonder what it's what the goal of the finalers is out in the mansion, on the outer space levels. You know, I've come up with an interesting theory about it, actually. And, you know, it's kind of a, and to me, all the stuff you have to go through, in a way, the longer it takes and the more people you can help get through it along with you, you know, the better it all is. I mean, it's just got so much to it.
Right, and you should be really trying to focus your attention as far in the future as you can, like you're saying, to try to build up some genuine enthusiasm now. Because, you know, notice what they're saying between the lines there. You know, we say to them, well, I'm not disillusioned. I'm thinking about, you know, the first Absinite age. And their response is the Yoda response, right, to Luke. You know, you say, I'm not delusioned. And they say, you will be. Right, that's what they're saying right here. Yeah. Right? Wait till you see what laborious means.
But we are coming from an isolated sphere in rebellion. I mean, we're this isn't as easy as a lot of other people.
Sure, sure.
You know, so there's a we do get a little bit of that, you know, that puts us into the egg and Donner state. I mean, yeah, we do have a lot of
right. I agree.
You know, I mean, it's not easy here either.
I like the fact of when you're reading about the eternal sun and you remember how much they love us and all that. It gives me great encouragement.
Right, you know? And you need
I feel
loved. You need to really
as
focus on those things.
I am right now, I feel loved. And, you know, I know that they know who I'm going to become, and they love me for that.
Right.
I mean, it's inspiring to me. It doesn't put me down.
Right, but see, but you're doing what I just said you need to do. You're not staring at your feet looking for inspiration. You're trying to stretch your mind all the way to the Isle of Paradise and latch onto the eternal sun. Right. But if it's very laborious, the path that you're treading with your feet, there could be a tendency, you know, when your feet start to hurt, you tend to look at them.
That's why the greatest affliction is never to be an affliction.
Right? Right, being able to be afflicted and yet not fixate on your feet, you know, not fixate on the afflictions. Can you still keep your chin up and looking towards the horizon? You know, as long as you don't start, you know, bending over and staring at your navel. You know, woe is me. You know, as long as you don't, I mean, you got to keep, and they're just reminding you, you need to work on being as genuinely enthusiastic as you can right now, because there will be an opportunity to be disillusioned in the next life. It's not the cloud. You're not going to the cloud, you know, with the harp. Right? You're going to something that's appropriately described as laborious. Okay? And challenging. So it's going to be challenging. You're going to need courage and grit and, you know, you're going to need fortitude.
Yeah, but
so,
you forgot the word joyfully.
Yes. Right, I know. I didn't. I didn't forget it. But I just trying to, you know, notice that your spiritual consciousness notices the joyfully.
Right.
Does your individuality conscious notice the laboriously?
No.
And do you put the two together so that you have a cosmic perspective on it? Right? That's what we're I'm trying to, I mean, I know exactly where you're coming from, right? I mean, I'm trying to get you to notice a word besides joyfully. I'm trying to get you to have both eyes open. And notice how, you know, I'm getting blowback. It's like I don't like opening that eye. I like keeping that eye closed.
You can't make me open it.
Yeah, but I'm trying to stress that doesn't all of the helpers on the mansion worlds, they're constantly doing the same thing. Pam, you're closing your material consciousness eye again. They'll remind you, you don't want to do that, but it's so much more peaceful when I do. I know it's more peaceful, but there's several peaceful people on the prison worlds. Right. Those people that refuse to keep their individuality eye open, they are now on the prison worlds. You do not want to go there. Right? It's like, well, how could joy possibly take me to iniquity? It will. Joy all by itself, right? You've
joy
just
without sorrow then?
Joy without any purpose. You know, people who want to just bliss out.
Yeah, I knew a girl named Joy.
Took you for a
Okay, so just okay. So just in the way they wrap that up there. So, I mean, on the positive note, I mean, to look forward to the time when worship will be this, you know, definitively of the free will phenomenon. It'll be spontaneous. It'll be palpable like it you can't even imagine right now. You know, it will be so sublime when you can actually do it as a person, you know, instead of a fancy animal, right? That's what they're trying to tell you. You're finally getting to the point where you're becoming a person now on the fifth mansion world. A real Maranja character is budding. See? You're becoming a definitive person, not just a glorified animal, you know, made Maranja. Okay? A real, see, notice how they repeat the word real, right? That means there's personality. That's what's making it a reality, the patterning of personality. A real Maranja creature is evolving, right? There's personality. Finally, personality can begin to manifest. Finally, personality can begin to take a hold of spirit in a way where worship is real like it's never been real before. Okay?
Hold on a second.
Yep.
That's not to say that worship here and now is totally unreal.
It's just that right and here and now, worship is mostly in truth. But here, worship will become a fact. That's what they're trying to get you to recognize that. See, like I said, I mean, you worship indirectly now, right? You don't have a direct relationship to spirit right now. You can't worship directly right now. It's that sixth level of meaning, the level of worship. It's not called the spirit level. That's called the spiritual level, the spirit-like level, right?
But isn't it possible we touch on it now?
Right, indirectly. That's all I'm saying. I mean, there's nothing, you know, you are everything that you need to be right now. You're not supposed to be like this yet, right? But just to know that one day your relationship to spirit will be direct so that your worship can be direct for the first time. Instead of this very indirect thing where you're just reaching way up above your head trying to, you know, touch upon this very transcendent fact, but now it's going to be at eye level. And if worship is more direct, that means the potential of adoration, of actually getting a communication to the Father upon that substrate of communion with the cosmos, right, becomes much more potential. You would like to send your adoration to the Father. You can only do that on a real worship substrate. And finally, you'll be able to do that, right? All right, so that's the point. You know, again, because there's more direct spirit, and a Maranja is, you know, you're beginning to have more of an equal physical and spiritual energy nature, because there's some definitive spirit in play. So you can be more definitively Marantial, super additive. You know, and notice that. Literal substance that's super additive, Maranja substance, allows you to synchronize with that super additive fact of cosmic consciousness. Right? You're not just material, you're not just spiritual, you're super additive. And again, some being that is just very, very pure spirit-like can never do this. Right? You're beginning to be able to go above those beings. Right? You know, because this cosmic consciousness is super additive. And so, you know, again, it's you begin to recognize, oh, this is why I had to spend so much time getting a relationship with individuality. So that if I could bring in some unity and get this super additive consequence. What those beings that can never have much relationship to individuality can never achieve this, what I'm about to start achieving. Right. So that's what we're getting at. It's going to make it all worthwhile. All right. So the next world here.
8, the sixth mansion world. Sojourners on this sphere are permitted to visit transition world number 6, where they learn more about the high spirits of the super universe. Although they are not able to visualize many of these celestial beings, here they also receive their first lessons in the prospective spirit career, which so immediately follows graduation from the Marantxa training of the local universe.
Okay, so we're getting more spiritual, so we can start to have some beginning relationships with the higher spirits of the infinite spirit, you know, the higher personalities of the infinite spirit. You know, like solitary messengers, for instance. Yeah, you remember that paper about all those different types of beings, the so-called higher personalities of the infinite spirit. Solitary messengers are one of them. But, you know, you're not able to visualize many of them yet. So you still have a long ways to go before, you know, the subtler aspects of spirit as a substance in the external world, you know, can be sensed by you, right? There's still a lot of the way it is right now, where even the lowliest of spirit phenomena is not visible to me right now. But you're getting there. You at least can start to have an indirect relationship with these very spirit-like beings.
Is transition world different than mansion worlds?
Yeah, remember there's the transition worlds are the seven primary satellites. You know, go back to, let's see, what is that? That's let's see. Okay, so you know, paper 45, section 1. In this case, it would be, if you have single column, page 510.
Oh, okay.
You can see we're talking about world number 6 now. You know, so primary satellite number 6. The seven mansion worlds are around primary satellite number 1, around the finaliter's world. This is, see, number 6 is the world of the spirit. Now, this sphere serves as the system rendezvous of the high personalities of the infinite spirit. So that's what we're referring to. When you're on the sixth mansion world, you can go to the sixth primary satellite and its sub-satellites. Okay, and see here they also receive their first lessons in the prospective spirit career, which so immediately follows graduation from the Marantxa training of the local universe. So again, just speaking to, they're just trying to get you to see the logic of all this. I mean, if I'm starting to get some initial direct relationship with spirit, they can start to teach me something about, you know, what it's going to be like when you're a first stage spirit and leave the local universe. But before that, it would be pointless to try to teach the same, because it would just be completely abstract, just like it is now. I mean, I say spirit, it's just a word to you. I mean, you know, you've never kicked it, right? You've never held it in your hand, you know, you've never, oh, it's this spirit substance is smooth, this spirit substance is bumpy, this, you know, whatever, this spirit substance is shiny. I mean, you have no experience at all, mm-hmm. any qualities.
You can
feel
it, right? Right.
Well, see, that's the people use that word spirit like that.
Yeah.
But that's not spirit substance, right?
Well, so maybe not spirit substance, but wouldn't it be spirit?
Right. I mean, you know, what we feel is, you know, we have experiences in our inner life that are not as prosaic. They're more poetic. We have these more poetic experiences. They feel a little more transcendent to the day-to-day schlag. And we call those spiritual experiences. Well, again, I mean, remember, the real spirit substance can never be in your inner life. There'll never be any spirit substance in your inner life. That's all mind energy. You know, spirit substance is in the external world, just like this cup is, right? And it doesn't flow through your ears.
However, there is a spirit.
Right, but again, that's above your mind.
But the infinite spirit is the mind.
No. The infinite spirit is the mind bestower.
Okay.
Not mind. Right. Mind is a little, you know, energy. You know, any more than the aisle is this cup. Right. The aisle is different from this cup, and my mind is different from the source of mind.
Those
through
us, I don't know.
Okay, anyway. Okay. All right, let's keep going here.
The assistant system sovereign makes frequent visits to this world, and the initial instruction is here begun in the technique of universe administration. The first lessons embracing the affairs of a whole universe are now imparted.
Let's see, I guess, okay, that's the little paragraph, isn't it? Okay, just quickly there. Now, that's all really cool in the positive side, but take yourself back 200,000 years. Put yourself on the sixth mansion world 200,000 years ago. Who's the assistant system sovereign back then? Satan. Satan comes to the ascenders on the sixth mansion world, and he starts to teach them the ways of universe administration. What kind of an education did those ascenders get?
They were just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, you know, if they haven't fused yet, okay, I mean, you got to ask yourself. I mean, the system sovereign is, you know, coming to teach class today. He's going to teach you the fine points of universe administration, right? And are you sophistry proof as you're sitting in that class? Right? It really starts to make you wonder, it's like, how many people got this close to fusing and off they went? Right? We won't have to worry about that. You know, there'll be an integrous assistant system sovereign when we're there, but
big spike in the supreme adjuster population.
But just notice that between the lines. How challenging that would have been 200,000 years ago. The first lesson is embracing the affairs of the whole universe are now imparted. You know, he'll teach you about the foreign potentates, you know, how Michael is the great deceiver, you know, and is behind this whole oppression that you've been experiencing. I mean, that would have been the lessons day after day after day after day, right? You think it's problematic, you know, some university classrooms and the foolishness that are taught in university classrooms these days. I mean, think about the stuff those students were being taught back then.
Yeah. Now, so Gabriel set up some kind of decompression for that, I think. Right?
Yeah, but remember, initially, you know, they're all asking Gabriel, why don't you intervene? Why are you letting Satan going and teaching those ascenders, you know, all of this foolishness? Well, they're not sophistry proof. They're not real.
Yeah.
Right? It's a test.
Yeah.
Right? You know, it's a probationary phenomenon. It's a test. And you either pass the test or fail the test. Right? You know, so, you know, again, that's a scary thing, you know. That doesn't make me feel joyful to think about how, you know, I'm moving into a test, and I have to pass this test. One way or another, I have to pass the test. I don't just get graduated, you know, because I came from, you know, a tough part of the local system or something. You know, I'm not given a pass because I'm a rebellion in a default world. I still have to pass the test as an individual.
The executioners are nearby and they're really busy. That's really not, you know, the truth behind all that is that also for those people that unknowingly and unwittingly got beguiled, mm-hmm. you know, Michael offered all of them, you know, mercy. Mm-hmm. And they had, and so for the ones that were sincere.
Well, if they didn't go to iniquity, I mean.
Well, if they went to iniquity, you know, by being. Because of being beguiled, I just, you know, you're dealing with infinite mercy.
No, you go to evil because you're beguiled. Okay. Remember, there's, you know, sin is separate from being beguiled. You know, sin is where you're not being fooled anymore. Sin is where you know exactly what's good and bad.
Okay, right. So they did know, and somebody told them anyway.
Right, see, that's the deal. I mean, you know, and
I would think that a lot of them.
Yeah, you know, and Michael tried to teach us this, remember, you know, as you read part 4, does it ever say you can overcome sin with goodness? No, because you can't. You can overcome evil with goodness, but not sin. Because, you know,
but you can be forgiven.
Well, no, you can turn around. I mean, you know, you're always forgiven. You know, there's no, you know, forgiveness doesn't fix anything. I mean, we're always forgiven.
So these guys could, you know, I mean, even if they went to sin or whatever.
Yes, but that, right, no, there's no argument there, right? The only question, you know, if you go to iniquity, there's nothing to turn around.
So what I'm saying is, if the guy came in and taught you in a class and you were thinking, you know, and you got taught wrong and you didn't know you were being taught wrong.
Right, there's no issue there. Right, and that's all I'm saying is, you know, he's coming in, he's putting up a bad thing, and he's saying it's good, and he's convincing everyone that it's good, and they're taking a hold of it because they think it's good, but it's actually bad. Right, that's evil. Okay. Right, but at some point, some of those people, will, you know, could get into the same mode that Satan was in, you know, when he's teaching that, where, you know, you recognize that in the big picture, this is bad. But you deem it to be good for you, right? Remember that whole, you know, what they were just telling it about. You know, there's always shades of, you know, how did they word that? Where you, I can't find it. Where in the heck is that, that sentence about? Oh, on social activities are predicated neither on personal aggrandizement or self-seeking conquest, right? Personal aggrandizement and self-seeking conquest are enticing. And you can see definitively that it's bad for the whole. But you go, yeah, but for a short period of time and for me, it's really cool. You know, it really, it benefits me. So even though I know it's bad for the whole, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, and that's where it gets tricky. You know, and as long as they haven't gone too far down the line where they literally become cosmic insane, you know, so that there's no point of return, you know, where you literally, like I said, where they literally get things flipped around, where, you know, they aren't being deceived anymore that something that's bad is good. They objectively are seeing things, but now bad looks good to them. You know, they've literally got it flipped around in their head.
They lost their reality.
They've lost their ability to discriminate bad from good.
So they lost their individuality.
Well, they're on the verge of it, right? I mean, you know, once you can't, you know, properly distinguish bad from good, it's very hard to turn anyone around. And then
it's like what they say happened to Judas. Mm-hmm. You know, the sin was very insightful in the committing of it, and then once it was over, it's like,
I mean, it dawned on him there. Yeah, see, and what did Judas do? Did Judas do what Lucifer did? No, he did the opposite. He said, oh my goodness, this is not good, this is bad. And he was so distraught, he killed himself.
Yeah, he couldn't live with himself.
Right, and he didn't get to sin. It's just evil. There's no sin there, let alone iniquity.
Yeah, I think he was just mad about
that. He was just confused. He's just an ignorant little child 2,000 years ago. Yeah. And I mean, no way he was even remotely sophisticated enough to get to iniquity, right? The moment he had any, the moment the Holy Spirit, you know, insight kicked in, it was clear to him, whoops, this is bad, right? I mean, he didn't take one step down sin.
And think about it, he even did it before Jesus resurrected. He did it right after.
Right. He didn't need the Spirit of Truth or anything like that, right? But just, you know, note the difference. You know, when Lucifer got to that point that Judas got to, he did the opposite. When Lucifer said, oops, this is not good, this is bad, right? But he was in that mode, like I was just saying, personal aggrandizement and self-seeking conquest, right? Right, he'd gone public. You know, he didn't have the courage to, you know, say, oops, boy, am I an idiot. Right, he was in love with all the adulation that everyone gave him as a brilliant spiritual being. You know, he just walks into the room and everyone melts. You know, they're just bathed in the joy of his spiritual radiance. He fell in love with that ability to just charm people with his presence. Right, you know, and he's not gonna, you know, he didn't have the courage to admit what an idiot he was.
Certainly wasn't suicidal. That would have been a very different scenario.
All right. So anyway, just okay. So let's see. Where were we? I can't even remember.
We're on the brilliant age.
Oh yeah, we're up here. That's right. Yeah. So let's see. We got everything there, didn't we? Let's see. We did the frequent visits and
first lessons.
Yeah. Okay. So we did everything. Yep. All right.
This is a brilliant age for ascending mortals, and usually witnesses the perfect fusion of the human mind and the divine adjuster. In potential, this fusion may have occurred previously, but the actual working identity many times is not achieved until the time of the sojourn on the fifth mansion world, or even the sixth.
Okay, so there's a couple things there. See, a little twist that they don't talk about in other places. Okay, on the surface, you just have the basic thing. You know we're moving from third circular towards first circular and fusion. Okay, so you know, they're saying that happens here somewhere. But notice the little twist there. You know, the fusion may have occurred previously, but the actual working identity many times is not achieved. So for even those, let's say you fused on the third mansion world. You know, let's say you weren't a third circular there, but you actually fused on the third mansion world. They're pointing out that you still need to get to the point where there's some definitive, direct relationship to spirit that comes separate from the fusion issue. You know, that you only achieve when you get up to the fifth and sixth worlds. So, you know, that kind of gives you a little hint about, you know, take Enoch. You know, you're saying, oh, so Enoch must have been one of those individuals. He could fuse really early on, but it's still, he had a long ways to go to sort of kind of come up to speed on that, sort of put some flesh on the bones of that fact. You know, there's this kind of very innate little thread in him that could very immediately lead to fusion. You know, but, you know, there wasn't much quantity, you know, associated with that quality.
The working identity.
Right, this whole bit about, you know, to actually to get it to be something that you are directly consciously working with rather than something that's just sort of super conscious and happens, you know, above you. Right? So even though someone might fuse on their nativity sphere, you could see how they're pointing out between the lines. They could have a lot of work to do yet on the early mansion worlds. You know, if it was, it's almost like they fused by fiat. You know, they came together as a foundational fact within the Supreme, with sort of the ability to fuse almost immediately. But you know, there's nothing really that they've done. It kind of just happened. You know, it's almost like spirit fusers. See, you know, where, you know, you're given that encirclement in the Holy Spirit, like we were talking about last time. You know, you're given that encirclement in the Holy Spirit by grace. And that which you're given by grace is enough to fuse with a spirit fragment of the Creative Mother Spirit. You don't have to add anything to that.
It's almost like getting your MD degree, but you really don't really have it until you go out and actually practice.
Like in Caribbean University.
So the whole point of all this is, you know, you're reminded that they mentioned spirit fuses. They made a point of mentioning them back, remember? And we were kind of wondering, why did they mention it? And we talked about it a little bit. You see here again, they're trying to remind you of how they're one endpoint of a spectrum, right? You know, and that some father fusers are not that far removed from a spirit fuser. They kind of just have, you know, innately what they need to fuse. You know, you just add a couple little things to what you're given by grace in the encirclement, and boom, you fuse with the father fragment. But others, no. Right. I mean, they're completely at the other end of the spectrum. You know, they make it all the way to Salvington before they fuse. Right? I mean, what they were given by fiat was completely inadequate to fusing. It's like, well, why is it inadequate? I had just as much as that other guy, and he fused. Like, well, no, I mean, you know, it's your different parts fit into the cosmic system in different ways. You know, just because it's the same magnitude doesn't mean it has the same relationship to the whole. One little magnitude sort of automatically integrates with the whole really immediately, and the same magnitude doesn't integrate with the whole at all. It has to spend a long time accumulating a relationship with the whole enough that they fuse.
Well, I read that as in potential, doesn't mean they actually fused earlier.
No, they're just being, you know, I mean, they're just pointing out there's people fusing all at all sorts of different levels.
Yeah.
In potential, they could have fused on the nativity sphere. They're just reminding you that
they didn't actually fuse on the.
They're just pointing out that not everyone fuses on the fifth and sixth mansion worlds. They potentially could have fused earlier. Right? But to the spirit of what you're getting at, yeah, I mean, they're saying there isn't sort of this full actualization of that fusion yet. I mean, it's so that's there. But you know, they actually fused. But it's just sort of, it's just not fully in play, like John was saying. I mean, it's like fusion in name only. They're not using their fusion yet because they haven't gotten up to the level where they can really use that. You know, I mean, that's why I'm saying you look at what Elijah. You don't really have anything with Enoch. You look at what Elijah was doing, and it's like, well, I'm looking what he's doing. I'm trying to see how he's using fusion. It's like, well, no, they're trying to remind you here that it may not have been anything like that. He may not have been able to manifest really anything like that and couldn't until he got way up in the mansion worlds, right? Because he didn't have an actual working identity yet.
That makes sense.
See?
Is that working identity absolutely unique?
What was that, Noah?
The working identity absolutely.
Yeah, see, right, I mean, you see, they're using the word identity to remind you of this absolutely unique personality, right, identification. Right? And and that's the wild card. You know, what I was just saying about how much of a relationship to the whole you have, the means to have a relationship with the whole is your personality. See, and that's why they're saying it that way. I mean, you fused in actuality, but you haven't realityized that fusion yet. You know, you haven't sort of encompassed it really in a very significant way with your personality activity yet.
That's what you do for the Supreme uniquely. With the fusion of the jester.
Yeah. So you think about that big opening, you know, of paper 115, that supreme paper.
Yeah.
One must do something as well as be something. So that's another way of thinking about what they're saying here. Yeah. I mean, these individuals that fused earlier, they are something. They fused, you know. Remember, you're fusing in this kind of, you're giving this relationship to the existential father and stuff. Okay, so, you know, yeah, you are something, you're fused, but you're not doing that yet. You know, to have a relationship to the whole, to the supreme, one must do something as well as be something. So that's what they're getting at. Is there's all these different shades of how you relate to the father and the mother. You know, everyone is different. Some relate to the father quickly. Some relate to the mother quickly, and everything in between. And, you know, it's just all these different shades, and that's what they're trying to get us to think about. So we don't think so simplistically and linearly. It's, you know, when all is said and done, your personality is absolutely unique, and the way you get to fusion is absolutely unique. Yeah, you know? And so there is no everyone fuses on the sixth mansion world or something like that. That's not possible. Right? Because every personality is absolutely unique. Yep.
Jenna just wants your confirmation that Satan taught on the mansion worlds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just, I'm just saying, the assistant system sovereign makes frequent trips to this world. I mean, that's not just now. I mean, they're saying that, and that's just part of the regime. You know, as I'm saying, so you go back 200,000 years, you know, and again, you know, you can flip back to, like you're saying, you flip back to that paper and say, well, system sovereign now? It's like, well, I mean, system sovereign is Laniforge, and first assistant sovereign is Mansurosha, right? So, you know, there's a second assistant sovereign also, but you think, well, okay, so it's probably the first one, first assistant sovereign, that comes here. So, you know, when we get there, Mansurosha will, you know, will be giving us lessons on the sixth mansion world.
And but, that'll be a lot better than Satan.
Yeah. Yes. Distinctly better. all right. Let's see. I can't even remember where we are now. Are we in the Union?
Yeah.
Okay. So keep going.
The union of the evolving immortal soul with the eternal and divine adjuster is signalized by the seraphic summoning of the supervising super angel for resurrected survivors and of the archangel of record for those going to judgment on the third day. And then, in the presence of such a survivor's Morancha associates, these messengers of confirmation speak, "This is a beloved son in whom I am well pleased." This simple ceremony marks the entrance of an ascending mortal upon the eternal career of paradise service.
Okay, so...
it's the same thing you said for Jesus.
Well, okay, so let's bring that up first. Is it the same thing?
Close.
Okay, does anyone remember exactly what's...
"This is my beloved son."
Right, right, right. At the baptism of Jesus, it's, "This is my beloved son," instead of, "is a beloved son," and... up there, son is capitalized, right? Son is not capitalized here, right? Because you're not a creator. You're a creature, right? Right, so just, you know, note that difference, how they, and you know they're often doing that. They're, you know, obviously no one on the sixth mansion world is going to speak those English words, but they're just taking that set of words out of the Bible and they're using them. So in truth, something like this is said. In fact, what is said, who knows? But
there's another reason why not my.
Yeah.
You know, it was the personalized adjuster speaking
sure,
to Jesus.
Sure, sure.
So it literally was.
Right, I know. I'm just...
So it's never going to be your adjuster speaking to you from the outside the way the adjuster was speaking to Jesus from the outside.
Right. My whole point was just for you to activate your individuality conscious enough to notice the difference of the two sentences. Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't need to explain the difference of the two sentences. That's pretty straightforward. But see, just, you know, to challenge yourself to not go, "Oh yeah, I've read that before." You know, it's like, no, focus in on all the words. Notice all the words. Use your individuality consciousness, you know, and then reflect on those differences. And you know,
yeah, but in truth, we are his beloved.
Well, sons. But it's not being said that
way. Right, but yes, right. But so you're getting into what Andre is saying. I mean, once you notice the differences, you know, then you can begin to think about the differences, understand the beauty of the differences. It's important to not blur it all together. You know, and just the fact of the humblingness of he gets a capitalized son, you don't. Don't forget that. You know, don't falsely exalt yourself and capitalize that word.
I don't think it's false. That goes against my spiritual consciousness when you say that.
I know it does.
Because
why is that?
It's so rude because we are his sons. He loves us.
Yes, that's what it says right there.
There's nobody that he loves more than us. You know what I mean? Each one of us, it says that.
But there's two types of personalities, right?
Well, you know.
Creator personalities and creature personalities.
Still doesn't have any. They're one with him, though.
No, they're different.
They're individualized.
Remember, they actually say that directly in the book, that the Father treats creators different than he treats creatures.
Okay, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually, but it's very important. I mean, you know, it's an individuality consciousness thing, right? To notice a capital letter, right? And to face that, right? Don't exalt yourself into a creator. Doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with love. Right? You know, you aren't loved less because you aren't, your son, word son isn't capitalized. Right? Or in the case of you, you're not loved less because the word is son and not daughter.
I know we won't right? have any kind
right.
of sex anyway.
Right, you won't, yeah, you're not male, these aren't males and females. The word son doesn't mean male. Yeah. Right?
I understand
that. Right, you know, we understand that. You know, that's indicating you have a relationship to the father, that you're a son.
Where does it say that you were saying?
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to look that up. I mean, that's a, but, okay, so notice some of the other mysterious details they throw in there. So they tell you all these strange things. Okay, that it's, that this is signalized by the seraphic summoning of the supervising super angel for resurrected survivors and of the archangel of record for those going to judgment on the third day. Yeah, I was like, okay, well, what's the difference between the archangel on the third day and the archangel of millennial resurrections? There's all these mysterious things. Yeah, it's a little hard to know exactly what we're supposed to get out of that, but just notice the specificity. It's just, rather than trying to understand it completely, just notice that there's this very specific thing. Only certain, you know, it has to be the supervising super angel for resurrected survivors, not a supervising super angel for something else. You know, there's all of this specificity on high. You know, it isn't Henry Ford's interchangeable parts on high. Right? Not any old super angel will do. A very specifically trained and, you know, created, you know, type of being only can do that job. And you don't have any idea of why, what the... There's some physics to this, apparently.
Is the seraphic summoning, does that mean that's the attendant seraphims
are yep, summoning right. your pair others? Of your pair of seraphim, right? Yeah.
Okay.
That are right. You know, remember, you know, when you're fusing as a Mirantia being, it's not like your Mirantia body vaporizes. You know, it doesn't have any effect on the Mirantia body. You know, so you know, no one even, you know, if the seraphim didn't point it out, you know, who are aware of what's going on inside of you, no one would even know you fused. Right? And so
you guys must be busy because a lot of people are fusing now. But
right, years. Right. So, you know, this is a... think about how exciting that would be, you know? As a birthday party, you know, yeah, everywhere you turn.
Yeah.
You know, no wonder, you know, it's you start to manifest a bona fide experiential enthusiasm, right? I mean, this is starting to get really exciting.
No wonder it's simple, because right? you haven't got a whole lot of time.
Okay.
Next.
Okay, so, you know, and you get this formal announcement, and but it's just, you know, but whatever it specifically is, it's just a simple ceremony, and seeing that matches the... you know, it's not a simple ceremony when you fuse on your nativity sphere, you know, and you're in the Mirantia temple, you know, say when it's, you know, an age of light and life and all these people gather. It's a big to-do, right? Right? Because, you know, you go up, you know, your body is obliterated, and, you know, this blast of energy goes up into the atmosphere and all, you know. So the ceremony here matches the subtle, imperceptible
kind of like graduating from college, you get your thing and you're right. next.
The reason I'm stressing this is we, because of Paul, the Apostle Paul, everyone that's lived on this planet for 2,000 years has gotten an unfortunate bias drilled into their heads, right? Everything has to be this conversion experience sort of thing. You need this suddenly of, you know, profound, you know, no, Jesus never had that. Jesus was a gradually, right? There was no suddenlies. You know, remember how they try to stress that, how unfortunate it is that you believe that what you should challenge yourself to have is the faith of Paul. No, what you need is the faith of Jesus, a faith devoid of all those suddenlies, all those conversion experiences, right? You just subtly, imperceptibly are grown until one day, and you don't even notice it, you fuse. Right? If you challenge yourself to be more like that, to set your sights on being more like Jesus instead of like Paul, your life will go better. You won't have all of these false expectations about every moment. It's so easy, you know, to overplay things if you get in that conversion and mysticism mode, you know, that this fixation on the Paul's experiences have given us. It's a very unfortunate aspect of Christianity. You know, Christianity is just dominated by seeking Paul-like experiences. It's like, you know, is it a religion about Paul or a religion about Jesus? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to have a religion about some man, why don't you try Jesus instead of Paul?
That's for sure.
Right? But no. Jesus was boring. Jesus' path to fusion was boring, and that's why it didn't get turned into a religion. Paul's path to enlightenment was spectacular. Involved all kinds of mysterious things, you know, scales falling from his eyes and yada, yada, right? Humans fixate on that, right? Just, you know, notice that, you know? If you were living back then, you would have had a tendency to say, well, the Jesus guy, wasn't very exciting. You know, if we're going to write about him, we should play the story up. We need to make him walk on water, and we need to do all kinds of groovy things, you know, and we got to fixate on Paul, and see, because Jesus' life was kind of boring. Right? And he sort of fostered that, you know. He kept most of the things of his life secret so that they wouldn't have anything that they could aggrandize. If you're going to strike step with the faith of Jesus, you need to see beyond the surface, the razzle-dazzle, right? Signs and wonders. Jesus is not about signs and wonders, right? But almost everyone that invokes his name is about signs and wonders, right? You're looking for some spectacular spiritual experience or something. No, you're supposed to trust everything beyond the dead level of consciousness, you know, to those who know about such physics, right? You just be a satisfied little tadpole, right? Don't look for a conversion experience into a frog one day on the Damascus Road. It's a very different thing, and it's a challenge. So just notice that. It's a very simple ceremony. You know, I mean, you know, you even wonder, it's like, do you even know? Or do your guardian angels have to tell you you just fused?
Well, we'll find out. Let's read the next paragraph.
Yep.
I was just thinking about what you're describing about Jesus, and when you have balance and harmony, it doesn't make such a splash in waves. It's more balanced and harmonious.
Yes, right.
It's
see,
a calm assurance.
Balance and harmony. Will it not? If you try to of all human knowledge, that which is of greatest value is to know the religious life of Jesus, not Paul, and how he lived it. Right? If you set your sights to that, it's going to naturally foster cosmic consciousness. Right? You're not going to so fixate on your spiritual consciousness. Fixating on Paul fosters, exacerbates this problem of fixating on your spiritual consciousness so that you can never get any cosmic progress. You'll die as a seventh circler, fixating on Paul. Right? You're not going to make any cosmic progress. Right? You need to be more like Jesus. Balance. You know, he wasn't oblivious to the individuality issues. He considered them just as important as the unity issues, because they are equally important. The universe would have a hard time existing if all you had was the eternal sun and no Isle of Paradise. Right? If you take the Isle of Paradise out, everything disappears.
That would be a problem.
Yeah.
Certainly would have dumbed things down quick.
Yeah. So it's equally important. And this is one of these biases that we have to overcome. We've been so indoctrinated like this for 2,000 years. All right.
Immediately upon the confirmation of adjuster fusion, the new Marantxa being is introduced to his fellows for the first time by his new name and is granted the 40 days of spiritual retirement from all routine activities wherein to commune with himself and to choose some one of the optional routes to Havana and to select from the differential techniques of paradise attainment.
So they tell you this and you go, oh, so Jesus was very precisely trying to go through these steps. You know, when he got to the point of fusion, he followed that by 40 days. Right? So it's not a coincidence. I mean, he is, you know, he knows that if he was on the mansion world and was fusing, right, there would be precisely 40 days. Right? And, you know, what did he do? I mean, you know,
he went through all those different decisions.
Right, the six decisions, right, you know, all that. Right.
He wasn't going to throw himself off the cliff.
Right, yeah, and you think about what it said, you know, up there in, what his paper is this? This is paper 136, section 3, where it says, now went into 40 days of retirement to formulate the plans and determine upon the technique of proclaiming the new kingdom of God in the hearts of men. Plans and technique. Notice what you have here. Optional routes and differential techniques.
And then remember at the end of that, it says that when he came down, he decided to, you know, quietly go about preaching the gospel and let his heavenly father, his thought adjuster, says, work out the details day by day, right? Remember that?
Right.
Which is a good thing for us to do, I think.
But, you know, just thinking about that optional route, right? I mean, that's, you know, and he's going through making those decisions. Six great decisions, right? He has optional routes. I mean, he could have started to manifest the fact that he now possesses, you know, a relationship to the power personality synthesis, right? He could start to manifest that directly. Decided, no, I'm not going to start to reveal God the Supreme. I'm going to continue to reveal God the Father. You know, he made all those decisions. He's got these optional routes, right?
So what kind of optional routes do you think we have?
Yeah, see, now, you see, the optional routes and differential techniques, right, who knows what that means, but there's apparently all kinds of different options about things that we don't understand anything about. I'm sure it would be hopelessly simplistic if we even speculated what these are, you know, thinking, well, I guess I could be an astronomer for a while, is that what they mean, you know, or, I mean, it's probably much more complicated than that.
But it'll be the first time there will be this intimacy with personality without a gesture.
Yeah.
At this level. So these are not just idle speculations at that point.
Right. You literally, now there's personality identified with that fragment of infinity. I wonder how many different routes there are in infinity. Right. Right.
Well, they do talk in some
the doors are blown wide open
about careers and the different kind of careers.
Right. I mean, it must have. Yeah, you know, I'm sure it has something to do with careers and stuff like that, or you know, how much you go off on sidetrack, you know, things or whatnot. But yeah, I'm sure the really cool stuff is beyond our comprehension, right?
I'm going to take the Lewis and Clark route. Right?
Probably a lot about purpose because I think your thought adjuster. Is a lot of a purposing kind of thing. I mean, it's a pattern purposing kind of thing, and so once you know more about what your purpose is, what you're about, then you know that information would help put a bead on what options might be appropriate.
Yeah, I was just kind of going to bring that up, you know, just before we went on. You know, remember they tell you in the adjuster papers how the adjuster comes with a plan. Right. See, so, and like Gene was saying, see, finally now you can directly get a hold of that. Right? It isn't this vague super conscious thing. You've got it right in front of you now. You know, you've locked onto it with your personality. But, you know, it still says choose. Okay, so that reminds you that it's not like the adjuster comes with, okay, take three steps, turn 30 degrees. You know, I mean, he doesn't come with something that's micromanaged like that. Right.
And the different techniques.
Because your personality still has to have freedom, right? You know, and so, you know, but you're going to, you know, there's going to be some sort of initial framework that you're working in that the adjuster brought with it. And then you you bring your unique influence into that, you know, whatever the heck that means specifically.
You get to pick the color of fabric and the color of
the you start way down here.
And you know, what kind of stitch exactly.
It's just whatever analogy works for you to try to think about, you know, what the heck differential techniques of paradise attainment are.
Right?
Same pattern.
Yeah.
Looks different.
Okay.
But still, are these brilliant beings more or less material? They are far from being true spirits. They are more like supermortals, spiritually speaking, still a little lower than the angels, but they are truly becoming marvelous creatures.
You see, that, so there's that comment I said we were going to be getting to. Glad we actually got to it. So, you know, when you're on the Mansion Worlds and you get the fusion and stuff, you still, in terms of the nature, the energy nature of your body, you haven't gotten up parallel to the energy, equivalent energy nature of a seraphim yet. Okay, so they're just, you're still a little bit lower. You know, so you're still more down in the cherubim, you know, whatnot sort of range, apparently. But you're working your way up towards being kind of energy parallel to seraphim. And, you know, and they said we were getting more into spirit, but again, it's all relative. But still, even when you fuse, as a Marantia being, these brilliant beings are more or less material. Right, so it's all relative. Right, so there's still a lot of opportunity to bring more unity into relationship with this, you know, your more or less an individuality phenomenon. Right, and more cosmic consciousness can result, more and more opportunity for the personality to manifest through that triunity. Yeah, but nonetheless, relative to where you were on the first Mansion World, yeah, what was it they said at one point here that we've been reading that, you know, things are really starting to get going. I think it was when we first started, you know, reading about that. Yeah, transport to the fifth Mansion World represents a tremendous forward step. Right, so, you know, you've come a long ways from the first Mansion World, but you're a long ways from Havona yet. Okay.
During the sojourn on World Number 6, the Mansion World students achieve a status which is comparable with the exalted development characterizing those evolutionary worlds which have normally progressed beyond the initial stage of light and life. The organization of society on this Mansonia is of a high order. The shadow of the mortal nature grows less and less as these worlds are ascended one by one. You are becoming more and more adorable as you leave behind the coarse vestiges of planetary animal origin. Coming up through the Great Tribulation serves to make glorified mortals very kind and understanding, very sympathetic and tolerant.
Okay, so let's just, you know, pull out a couple of things in there. So first of all, that you know, just reminding you that we're, you know, these three worlds here, we're sort of just kind of moving through this, the various stages of the light and life in some way, you know, in a parallel way. And the organization of society in this Mansonia is of high order. So, you know, remember how they've wanted us to keep that in mind as we're going through, you know, at every stage, there can be more and more of a definitive socialization phenomenon. So if nothing else, you know, you'll continue to be delighted at how much more you can synchronize with your fellows and have this, think of it super summative, you know, you have a group of individuals, and more there can be this opportunity for you to function in this collective way at higher and higher levels, and that will be very exciting. You're becoming more and more adorable. as you leave behind the coarse vestiges of planetary animal origin. Okay, now first of all, there's a great, this is a great example of, oh, I mean, like a puppy is adorable? I mean, what do they mean? You know, there's a great example of where you always want to start with the, you know, the literal meaning of the word. I mean, that's where they want you to be here to begin with. Okay, so able to be talked to, right? The AD prefix there is to, you know, you have oration as the root, talk, you know, and able. I mean, the literalness, you know, you're becoming more and more able to be talked to, right? We were, you know, remember how we started this? We were talking about you learning the local universe tongue and then the super universe tongue, right? You are more and more literally something that one of these higher beings, they can actually talk to you. There's, you know, there's some similarity. Like I was saying, I mean, if a being talked to you in the local universe tongue right now, you wouldn't hear anything. I mean, you have no relationship to that input. It was, you know, all you would hear is total silence. Right, so more and more you're a phenomenon that is actually tangible, engageable by you know, a greater number of beings beyond your peers. So there's more and more opportunity for even greater socialization beyond your immediate peers. Right? You're beginning to have this ability to be engageable. So that. But the connotation there of using that word is important. You know, and you can tell it is, but because it doesn't just say you're becoming more and more adorable, period. As you leave behind the coarse vestiges of planetary animal origin, they purposely put in there because they knew you would think, oh, like a cuddly animal is adorable. They knew you would think that because that's the colloquial use of adorable. Right? I mean, it's kind of like the only use, I mean, the, you know, is that colloquial use these days. We don't use it in the direct literal sense anymore. Right? So they want to, no, you're a long ways away from coarse vestiges of planetary animal origin. Again, what you think is adorable now, no. That's coarse and animal. Right? They're challenging you again, see, between the lines. You know, technically what you think is adorable right now is grotesque. Right? That's that difficult, I don't like the feeling of that prickly, right? Again, distinguish fact from truth. They're trying to subtly get you that. Make sure that you recognize there's something about you that is in truth more adorable than any animal can ever be. You know, and when you finally begin to leave behind your animal-like aspects, you know, you won't just be in truth adorable, you will be in fact adorable. Right? Able to be spoken to, able to be intimately engaged. You know, two personalities interleaving in a profound dance, right, of recognition and communion.
Do you think that You know, like when you say adorable, in a way it indicates an attraction too. You think the attraction too is they're able to communicate? I mean, do you think there is an attraction?
Yes, there is. That's another connotation. We could bring that in that other connotation. If you look up the word adorable, you'll see it'll probably say something like worthy of being, you know, spoken to. You know, rather than just able, right? You know, see, again, you have a nature now, or, you know, it's worth someone engaging you, right? You're a significant phenomenon. You're a more definitive personal phenomenon, like we've been saying. There's something to engage, and hence they can get something from that. You're worth engaging because there's a super additive consequence potential there. You know, you can talk to a rock all you want. You're not going to get anything out of it. But if you can talk to a person, if you can engage a person,
there's, depends on who's in it.
It's not additive. It's a super additive thing, right? I mean, the only reason the universe exists is to have true, establish true relationship, right? You can finally begin to become one of these facts that can bequeath something to every person you meet, because you're a person now in a tangible way, and they will delight in engaging you because of that, because they will always leave richer than, you know, when they came. So, yeah. And then just that we won't get into the other ones, but as we continue on, they're starting this little bit of playing off of Revelation. The quote there at the end, coming up through great tribulation, they're referring to that passage in Revelation, where it literally is saying that they're coming out of great tribulation. But see, they tweak that so that you're coming up through, you know, and pointing out that those passages in the book, you know, it's in relationship. They're talking about the 144,000, and then all the, and then the great multitude. You know, they're pointing out there's a truth there, of John having visions of, you know, this great multitude coming up through the mansion worlds, coming up through tribulation.
All Jehovah's Witnesses.
Right, I mean, you know, and the Jehovah's Witnesses obviously play off of those passages a lot, but everyone does. I mean, it's not, you know, everyone, you know, delights in the book of Revelation, you know, has different ways of rationalizing those passages. But, you know, they're just, you know, trying, you know, they love to do that, you know. Just, you know, but if someone is a fact finder, right, they're going to say, no, that's not what it says in the Bible. You've twisted that, right? That passage is about you know, the great tribulation on earth, and, you know, and you survived, you know, all the fire and brimstone. You know, you're corrupting this. You know, see, I mean, they would find such a rewording, right? Blasphemy, right? You know, but the revelators see. So you have to, again, see, if you're too fixated on facts, you're going to have an issue. You know, you got to allow the revelators to say, okay, factually, that passage is grotesque.
You sure it didn't get changed in one of these volumes?
No, I mean, factually, they're telling you that passage in the Revelation is grotesque. But there's a truth there, and they try to show you the truth. See, so, I mean, see, over and over, it's the same thing. I keep, you know, it's a very important thing to try to let the revelators lead you away from factism, you know, into a relationship with truth, about yourself and about the Bible and about everything. All right, so we'll get the rest of the journey next time here. Let's take a moment.